this computer. Father, thank you for all you are to us, and we would ask that you be with us right now as we look into your word, speak to our hearts. Give us wisdom and those things that we need to know. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, one oft reproved may become stiff-necked, but he will be suddenly broken beyond repair. When the righteous become great, the people rejoice, but when the wicked dominate, the people groan. A man who loves wisdom brings joy to his father, but he who keeps company with harlots will lose his wealth. By justice, a king sustains the land, but a fraudulent man tears it down. I'm going to stop just here because I don't want us to get too far ahead before we, have a chance to reflect on some of these things.
Please.
So we did four verses. Any observations? Let's look at verse one. One oft reproved may become stiff-necked, but he will be suddenly be broken beyond repair. What do you think that's saying,
I
God?
think that that means if you're constantly critical of someone, that it does more harm than good.
Wow. I got just the opposite reading. Not that you're wrong. I mean, because I shouldn't say the opposite, but I'm looking at it more from the other direction, say, where if a person is being corrected and he becomes stiff, he says he may become stiff-necked, doesn't say he will. Or does yours say he will?
Well, no, I mean, mine says he who is often rebuked and hardened
And become stiff-necked. Yeah.
will
In
be
other words,
destroyed, and that without remedy.
it's not saying that you become stiff-necked because you're reproved.
I know. I think I misread that
You
initially.
may become stiff-necked if you're reproved, but regardless, doing so has a consequence. The consequence being that if you aren't corrected, then suddenly you're going to find yourself in a disastrous
Yeah,
situation.
I mean, God says that a lot in the Old Testament. It's like, because you are stiff-necked people, you are stiff-necked. That phrase comes up all the time, meaning that exact thing. It's like, because I tried to rebuke you and you did not listen, now this other calamity is going to befall you. So,
I like
also,
verses two and
hold on, Dad.
verse
You guys
twos.
read this chapter, right? Okay. So if you guys have anything to say, chime in. Because I had Dylan and Abby pre-read this chapter.
Oh, good. Good.
So whenever we get to your spot,
Oh, they have, do they have spots?
they have pre
Okay. Good. Well, remind me when we're there so we don't go over that. When the righteous become great, the people rejoice, but when the wicked dominate, the people groan. That's very true. Ultimately, the fate of a nation is the result of the behavior of the people, more than it is the result of the behavior of the rulers. We tend to think it is. But the rulers we have are most often reflections of the type of people we are.
Absolutely.
You look at Israel, and they had these wicked kings, but when the king set the idols up, all the people had to do, if they were so righteous, was say, "We're not worshiping these idols," but they all were more than willing to do it, you know?
That's true on every level. I think that the rulers that you have are a reflection of you. I think that the pastors that people have are a reflection. If you had a healthier congregation, you'd have a healthier pulpit.
Absolutely. Because
And
the
so, I mean, you think about it, if we took Jonathan Edwards's congregation place them under the preaching tree. You think they would tolerate that? You know what I
They
mean?
would be looking at the pastors saying, "What are you talking about?"
Right. Yeah, they would never tolerate that, and they would all leave the church or demand another pastor.
I don't even
So
think they'd have to say a word. Have you ever spoken before a group and got the sense that they were not with you and how
oh
uncomfortable it makes you feel?
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Carmen's like, yeah, no, that's
I think
true. Because
the
you're just like,
problem would be corrected
and
instantly.
so therefore, and he would just look on the crowd and be like, all right, I'm out, and just like walk off. No, it's true though. And so the fact that, we, or at least I used to complain about these pathetic pastors, but then you look at the congregation, it's like, that's why. Because if we were a healthier, stronger congregation, and it's really a reflection of how bad the congregation is as real. In other words, you can look at the pastor and then know the health of the congregation. And it's, man, that's a scary thought.
It's interesting.
This next verse here, whoever loves wisdom makes his father rejoice, but a companion of harlots wastes his wealth. I think about that a lot with the internet and stuff like that, right? There's these girls making $10,000, $20,000 a month, and it's like it's very destructive. And then, of course, the story of the prodigal son, that's how he wasted all his money. So it is very true that they're expensive. I don't know what else to say.
Well,
But it's something that I think we need to
I
guard
think the
against.
first part of the verse sort of gives the answer to the second. A man who loves wisdom brings joy to his father. In other words, if your heart is set on doing God's will and doing what's right, you're not going to become the person at the second part of the verse, because that is not the behavior of a person who loves wisdom. It because it's anyway. By justice, a king sustains the land, but a fraudulent man tears it down. I assume that's referring to the fraudulent man is referring to the king or the ruler. That if the king acts in a just way, the land will be blessed, but if not, it will be destroyed. Okay, why don't you take a few, John?
Yeah, by the way, I mean, mine just says the king establishes the land by justice, but he who receives bribes overthrows it.
That's
So
an that's yeah, a lot
yeah,
more
justice is
specific,
just overthrown by bribes. So a man who flatters.
And look at how much damage, for instance, all the in our country, from all the what do they call it? It's not, they don't call it bribes, but
Backsheesh.
no, not bakshish. What you know how they pay, there's these pay lobbyists, because they are giving bribes. They're disguised, nicely disguised bribes. You can do it in a lot of different ways, but it does
Yeah,
totally
of
corrupt
course.
the justice.
Yeah. So a man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. By transgression, an evil man is snared, but the righteous sings and rejoices. The righteous considers the cause of the poor, but the wicked do not understand such knowledge. Scoffers set a city aflame, but wise men turn away wrath.
Wait, let's stop on a few of these now, because these are good. Where did we
We left off on verse
man,
eight.
a man who flatters his fellow spreads a net for his feet? Sure. Because when you flatter somebody, you're telling them, oh, everything is good, you're great, you're doing wonderful, and they could be doing very poorly. So by telling them they're doing great, you're not helping them.
Right.
You know, if he's doing something that's ultimately destructive, then you just want to keep saying, oh, right on, you're doing good. That doesn't help him at all.
Right.
An evil man's offenses are a trap for himself, but the righteous sing out joyously. What does yours say for six? That's
By transgression, an evil man is snared, but the righteous sings and rejoices.
okay. And a righteous man is concerned with the cause of this is interesting. A righteous man is concerned with the cause of the wretched. A wicked man cannot understand such concern. Yeah. It's true because there are people who, whenever, what are you wasting your time with? Why do you care about helping the poor? That's
Yeah, it's true.
scoffers and flame. Is that where you stopped? Eight was the last one you read?
Yes.
Okay, I'll start then with nine. When a wise man enters into litigation with a fool, there is ranting and ridicule, but no satisfaction.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I mean, again, this reminds me of the internet. You know, it's like mine says, if a wise man contends with a foolish man, whether the fool rages or laughs, there is no peace. In other words, they're not trying to arrive at some understanding or resolution or
Absolutely.
find some way that we can mutually benefit or come to an understanding. It's just, I'm either going to scream and yell at you and ridicule you, or I'm going to laugh at you and mock you. I've been the recipient of that so much. It's like I'm trying to have a communication or conversation with you, and that I want to understand what your beliefs are, and I want you to understand mine, and maybe we can come to some. And it's like a fool doesn't want anything like that. They're either going
No.
to scream at you or mock you,
Yeah.
which is really,
Because
I
they
think,
don't want to be instructed. That's
yeah.
the point. It's they're not there to be instructed. They're there to prove to themselves that they're right and prove to you that you're wrong.
Yeah, right. But I think that the wise person genuinely seeks knowledge. And even if we have a discussion and it results in me saying, wow, I was wrong. I had
Yeah,
a
absolutely.
my perspective was really not clear on that. It's like that's a win for me. I don't
Sure.
want to just have a conversation proving myself to be right. I want to gain knowledge. And if that means I change my perspective, all the
Absolutely.
better.
Lots of times when I you probably experienced this too, John, but when you're having that kind of a conversation, even the questions that you ask, there's sort of questions that you want the person to be able to come up with a good answer for. Because if you phrase the question in such a way so that it's sort of a test, well, if he can answer this question in my mind, then I'm going to have to reconsider what I've been thinking.
Yeah.
And so you're like deliberately asking questions that you want to come back in a way where it challenges what you believe. At least I know I find I try to do that a lot.
Yeah. And yeah, it's amazing because you will get one of these two responses from most
Not
people.
all the time, but from people who, those kind of people are the people that I think the proverb says, cast not your pearls before swine.
Yeah.
When you perceive that a person is, and there's another verse, if you see somebody and you realize he doesn't have understanding, don't get in an argument with him. You're not helping him and you're wasting your time. And probably even, may even be hurting him because the person who is that is contentious like that isn't convicted by anything you say, and as a result, he is hardened in his false opinions. You know what I mean? He's just more convinced that he's right after he's through talking with you because he thinks he's prevailed and made fun of you and everything. And then he said, "Oh, I'm
Right, I came up with a
no,
better
I'm."
I came up with a better insult, so I won
Yeah,
that
so I
argument.
won.
Yeah.
I had verse 9 like written down on my notes.
You did, buddy?
Yeah.
What?
I just wrote down that it stood out to me.
Oh, Dylan said
Yeah.
that verse 9 stood
Okay.
out.
Which is
Which is the one we just read?
one. Let
The one that we just went over, Dad.
where am I? Oh, I'm looking on the wrong chapter. Okay. The one we just, when a wise man enters into litigation with a fool, there's ranting and ridicule. Okay, what's Dylan's observation?
No, he just said that
Well,
it.
I found it like relatable.
I guess he said, yeah, you heard him. I guess it resonated with him, I guess,
Yes, got it.
in his own experience
Yeah.
as well.
Sure. Sure,
That's good, Dylan.
absolutely.
The bloodthirsty hate the blameless, but the upright seek his well-being.
Bloodthirsty men detest them, and the upright seek them out. Yeah. You know why? Because the blameless are a rebuke to evil. The person who is living righteously is just by the fact that he is doing so, it's a criticism of the behavior of the evil
That's
person.
very well said.
And so, and you see this too. When there is this really, if you there's a politician who's putting forth, let's say, a very, he's standing up for righteous things, everybody wants to shoot him down.
Yeah, no, that's really well said. I've even watched that behavior in parades or rallies and or something like that, when it's something for transgenders or gay or whatever, and there's someone, just maybe a Christian, standing there, and they're not necessarily even doing anything offensive, but just their presence is infuriating to them.
It's a sign
And
of rebuke.
right, I think that there's a lot of that. Yeah, I think that just your presence, I mean, if they hated Christ, they will hate his followers. And so just any sign of that will be enough for men to hate you. But what you said is really profound. I mean, I wouldn't have necessarily thought about that, but you're right. It's like, that's why they hate the blameless, because it's a rebuke.
Because the upright man will seek the very person that they're against, will seek them out. You want take, for instance, Jordan. I'll give you Jordan Peterson as an example. I think a lot of people really hate him because he is saying things that challenge their belief. But on the other hand, those people who hold to those principles are going to seek him out. And there's people, he even tells the story. I've seen videos where he tells the story. He says, I actually am overwhelmed by the people who walk up to me on the street and start telling me how much I've helped them. He says, it's like a burden for me to bear, to imagine that I have this much influence over people. So,
Okay, a fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds them back. That's interesting too.
it's good to have restraint.
Yeah, I
There's a
was just
time
thinking
for
about that.
everything under heaven,
Yeah.
because when you just have no control and let everything out that, crosses your mind or heart without any restraint, it can have bad consequences. You say things that you shouldn't have said or that you wish you hadn't have said, and then after the damage is done.
So we need to be in control of that.
A ruler who listens to lies, all his ministers will be wicked. Man, that is true. That's the principle of, being able to. You know how they say he's
Yeah,
A lot of
well.
that is the bad judge of personality is generally a person who listens to flattery and listens to people who are trying to tell him what they think he wants to hear. And that's what causes the bad judgment. Because if you're going to listen to flattering words or words that are just making you feel great, you're going to be hiring or you're going to be promoting, let's say, people who shouldn't be, and demoting people who should be promoted.
Yeah, I see that daily.
And the result then is that the entire structure of the organization is corrupted. Because all the liars get rewarded, all the righteous people who are trying to do the good thing are the ones who get fired or are demoted. Same in the government, same thing.
Yeah, and of course, yeah, you it's I think it's even I would go so far as to say I think it's difficult to be promoted if you are if you're not a lying kniving
Conniving
person. Really, I think in the business world it's almost impossible to get ahead if you're not doing something like that.
hypocrites.
Because they're all built around lies and deception, and the rulers are looking for people who or the leaders are looking for people who can follow suit.
Yeah.
Right?
And even you can go so far if you it's like the Huey Long principle, the governor of Louisiana in the 30s.
Yeah.
He
That's what they
maintained
wrote
his he
all the
made
King's Men
all the
about,
king's
right?
men, yeah. He
Yeah.
maintained his power, his control, because he had something on everybody. So, it was like he was glad if he had somebody who was in his org. He didn't care, let's say he didn't care if he had a crooked person in his organization because he felt that was gave him power over. Because he could expose him or, whatever at any time.
Yeah.
So there's all different ways you could look at that.
It's amazing. All right. So the poor man and the oppressor have this in common. The Lord gives light to the eyes of both.
Wow, that's hard to understand.
It's I get from that they're equally dependent upon God, although they're in different experience or they have a different
Yeah.
expression or in life. I mean, the poor man is on the opposite end of the spectrum as opposed to the one who's doing the oppressing. But
Yeah, but they're both under
dependent.
God.
Yeah, they're both under God's sovereignty.
Yeah. A king who judges the wretched honestly, his throne will be established forever. That's God favors, obviously, the kings and judges who give equal justice to the poor as opposed to the rich. We say we do. We value equal justice under the law, but it's a hard thing to actually do or to actually have because people with money tend to get a little more equal justice than the people who don't have the money.
Yeah. They get a little bit more equal justice.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty self-explanatory, right? I mean, a child needs boundaries and discipline and an understanding between right and wrong or what's acceptable and not. And if you remove all those restraints, eventually you will have a child that will bring shame, which is the model that I think most people are following nowadays with child rearing. It's no boundaries, no discipline. It's just, we let our child decide what they think is right. We want them to live their truth. So
Well,
see what they have. When the wicked are multiplied, transgression increases, but the righteous will see their fall.
I'm going to comment on what you just said about that. We want them to live their own truth a little bit. I think the sad part of that is that if you really want your child to seek his own truth, you've got to give him the basis to be able to do that. If child
yeah,
doesn't have
sad.
the experience, doesn't have the experience you have. So it's not that you're trying to force him into some way that
Which
is
is what they
evil or
think.
wrong. You want to, doing nothing doesn't help him to find his own truth. It makes it harder for him because you're not giving him the benefit of your experience to add to his knowledge in order to make the proper decisions he's going to have to make later in life.
Yeah, that's well said. Right. I mean, there has to be some framework in yeah, I mean, all of the philosophers started with some premise.
Yeah.
And then they based their arguments
mm-hmm.
off of that. They
right.
built upon one another's work.
Yeah.
They didn't just come out of nothing and
nothing.
say, this is my worldview.
If you,
you know what
if
I mean? It
every
has to be
genera- if
based
every
on
generation
something.
Had to do that, it would be like starting from scratch every generation. And how much wisdom could you actually accumulate that way? Or how difficult would it be? You had no basis for anything. You'd have to try. It would be trial and error, trial and error. And your life's not long enough to make that many trials and errors.
Yeah.
That's the advantage of other people's wisdom.
Yeah.
In a large way, I think that's largely what the Bible is, too, if you think about it, especially the Old Testament. It's a record of all the trials and errors that Israel went through. And Paul says these things were written for our admonition, that we might profit thereby.
Right, and the reason why we can rely on those things is because human nature doesn't change.
Yeah.
We are just as susceptible to the same temptations and sins that all of the Old Testament stories describe. And I think that's another error that people fall into, where they think we've progressed beyond that and we're not, you know, we're wiser than that. It's like human nature doesn't change, which is why all of these things can repeat and often
you got
do
Ecclesiastes, repeat. There's nothing new under the sun. The thing that happened in the past is the same thing that's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. When the wicked increase, offenses increase, but the righteous will see their downfall. That's a good promise. Discipline.
There's another verse in the Bible. I can't remember what it says, but it says something similar to that, that the righteous will see the destruction of the wicked.
I wish we knew where
like
that was.
That.
We could put a little, I'd put a little footnote on my Bible for that one.
I can't remember what it is.
Probably one we've read recently in Psalms or something, but I couldn't find it either offhand. Discipline your son, and he will give you peace. He will gratify you with dainties. What does yours say? This one is...
Correct your son, and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul.
Delight to your soul. Okay. So, for lack of vision, the people lose restraint. Without, what does the King James say?
Where there is no revelation.
Vision. Oh, where there is no vision, people perish, I think, is the King James.
I don't know what the King James. I mean, I have the New King James.
No, the only reason I said that is because this has become like a proverb that, you know, in our own sort of like a Shakespearean thing where everybody quotes it over and over again. This is one of those famous quotes. But whenever those quotes are, you know, become part of the popular culture, they're usually from the King James. That's why. It's, I'm just going to look it up. This is 29, and it's verse 18. Where there is no vision, the people perish. That's the quote. Okay. I'm sorry, John. I think I threw a monkey wrench in the works there for you. Do you want to take the next one? John, are you there? We're gone. Huh. Turned it off. Okay, so we were down because the router was out. Okay, and everything's back up in order. And we're looking now at verse
19.
19. A slave cannot be disciplined by words, though he may comprehend. He does not respond. And I am assuming that means that because a person, or when a person is in the position of being a slave, it's he's not motivated the same way a person who's not a slave would be, because he's not really in control of his destiny. When a person's in control of his own destiny, you can reason with them on the basis of what, don't you think you should do this or that because of how it would benefit you or not benefit you. But when a person's not in control of his de destiny, it's like, I don't care. You know, I understand what you're saying, but why
That
should
is
I do
what
it?
I've always felt in the, again, in the work environment. When we have these rallies and these get-togethers, and it's like, we couldn't do this without the work of each and every one, and all this rhetoric. It means nothing to me because I know that I have no influence. I have no impact on the direction of the coming. And you're right. It's essentially, I'm a slave, and so all of their words mean almost nothing to me. And I don't know if that's a. Do you relate to that, Carmen? I've always felt like that. My entire work experience has always been like that. It's like, I don't really mean anything, and I don't really have any influence. So it's like a slave. It's like going to a slave and saying, like you're an integral part of the organization of this household. It's like the slave's gonna be like, really? You could throw me out today and hire another slave tomorrow and it'd make no difference. That's how
Well,
I feel.
We do all the work, but we don't get the
Right. Carmen's like, we do all the work, but we don't get the
we
credit.
don't get the credit.
Yeah. I mean, I've always felt like that. It's like they try to boost you up with rhetoric, and it doesn't mean much to me. But
I don't think, I think the rhetoric can be useful if there's some reality behind it. But when it breaks down when it's just words. If it's just words, nothing's going to come of it. It may take a little while for it to sink in with some people, but
right.
it
That's why
will
mine
everybody.
says a servant will not be corrected by mere words.
Mere words, yeah.
Like you were saying, it can't just be words.
Yeah, if there's something, if the words have consequences, and that then they can, they have an effect. But if it's just words, no.
Yeah.
If you see a man hasty in speech, there's more hope for a fool than for him. That gets back to what we were saying before about being restrained.
Yeah, and think before you speak, right?
A slave pampered from youth will come to a bad end. Why do you think that's true?
Hold on a second. Mine is a little different. It says, "He who pampers his servant from childhood will have him as a son in the end."
Oh, that's very different. Although mine has a footnote that the meaning in the Hebrew is uncertain, because that I'm getting you the two readings are entirely different.
Yeah.
They're antithetical almost, which is
Yeah.
interesting.
That's why I was having a hard time with
Yeah.
that. And I don't, maybe we should approach both and maybe we'll arrive at the truth in the middle
Well, I think there is
of.
truth in both. I mean, they're saying, although that's
I
interesting.
think that it's basically, I think from what mine says, he who pampers his servant from childhood will have him as a son in the end, is that you're engendering a total dependence and reliance upon
And
his master.
loyalty. In other words, like, what came to mind when you read your version was Abraham's servant, the one that he sent to get the bride for Isaac.
Yeah.
Before Isaac was born, this servant was like his son. In fact, when Abraham's talking to God and complaining about the fact that he doesn't have any heirs, he says, "Here, you promised me that my seed is going to be like the stars of the heaven." He says, "And here I am. I don't have any heir except the servant of mine,
Yeah.
and he's going to get everything."
Yeah.
So he was like a son, even though he wasn't a son. But I think what my translation is implying is that, like this verse about the slave who can't be corrected with words, if you are pampering your slave and he is actually in the position of a slave and you're treating him as if he were something other than that, in a sense, you're giving him a distorted sense of reality. What happens if you die and he becomes someone else's property? Now he doesn't know how to deal with the real world because
Right.
you've given him
That's
this
a good point.
distorted view of how things are.
I
So I think both things are true, and maybe that's good that the Hebrew's vague.
like what you're saying too. I think that I think any type of pampering in that sense is destructive. Even if, forget the slave who becomes your son, what if it is your son? In the same way, if you pamper them and you shield them from the realities of life, you're not setting them up for future
For the
success.
future of things they could face.
They're, yeah, because they think that the world is just, food just appears in the refrigerator and, lights just turn on. It's like, but you're not really prepared for reality or independence, which should be the goal ultimately.
An angry man provokes a quarrel. A hot-tempered man commits many offenses. A man's pride will humiliate him, but a humble man will obtain honor.
Yeah, that's a beautiful verse. I mean, Jesus refers to that principle all the time, where it's, he who will humble himself will be exalted. He who exalts himself will be humbled. We see that all the time. And it's true. I think a man's pride is puts you in a very dangerous position a lot of times to be humbled. And there's a million examples of that, but I mean, your pride, for example, can make you want to confront somebody, let's say, and your pride is operating instead of your logic and reasoning, and you might be humbled real quick, and you put yourself there because of your pride, so. That's just one example, but I think humility is something that we should be praying for and working towards, because that's where the real exaltation is. I mean, pride does nothing but bring people low, so in one way or the other.
He who shares with the thief is his own enemy. He hears the imprecation and does not tell. There's a footnote on mine to Leviticus 5:1, which is interesting because in Leviticus 5:1 it says, if a person incurs guilt when he has heard a public imprecation, and although able to testify as one who has either seen or learned of the matter, he does not give information, so that he is subject to punishment. Now there's a bunch of other examples. Person who touches an unclean thing. It says when he realizes, all the way down in verse 5, when he realizes his guilt in any of these matters, he shall confess wherein he has sinned and bring a penalty to the for his sin to the Lord. But the point is that if a person knows that another person has committed a crime and he's asked to give testimony and he doesn't, he's guilty for not doing that, according to Leviticus.
Mm.
So what the Proverbs is saying, a man who shares with a thief is his own enemy, in that he puts himself in that position. Because now if he's called to testify, he's not going to testify because he knows that whoever he testifies against is going to say, yeah, that's right, and he was helping me.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, he's the one... He's the one that, whatever. So,
and we see that all the time with people who scheme to get, you know, life insurance money, yeah, and stuff like that. And they bring the couple, and it's usually someone who's having an affair with someone else, and they'll, mm-hmm, they'll bring them in, and immediately after months and months and months of this clandestine partnership, and it's like as soon as they're brought in, it's like, oh, she put me up to it, yeah, he told me that, you know, and it's like they will slit each other's throat in a second.
Yeah. a man's fears become a trap for him, but he who trusts in the Lord shall be safeguarded.
Amen. Again, I, you know, this was something I think that was applicable during the whole
COVID
vaccine mandates and stuff like that, that your fear, misplaced fear, rather, mm-hmm, brings a snare. But when you're rightfully fearing the Lord and placing your trust in him, there's safety in that.
Yeah. We're almost to the end. Where's Abby's portion?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's supposed to be more comments from... You guys had three comments each, right?
No, you told us to get one.
I said three.
Okay, you said one.
I
chose
16.
16?
I didn't say that.
Yeah, Abby, we passed 16.
Well,
but we didn't stop.
You just picked up. I just like it because you say things like that a lot.
I say things like that a lot? When the wicked are multiplied, transgression increases, but the righteous will see their fall? Oh. Well, that's a compliment.
That's the one that I find hard to believe sometimes. That's why I said it's a good promise.
Yeah. Okay.
But so that was Abby's portion.
We haven't got there yet.
Oh, okay.
What's yours, Dylan?
Well, we haven't gotten there yet, he said.
Oh, okay. What did we just read? 26?
25.
No, 25. Many seek audience with a ruler, but it is from the Lord that a man gets justice. Wow.
Okay.
And the last one is, this is Dylan's, obvious.
An unjust man
is an abomination to the righteous. And he whose way is straight is an abomination to the wicked.
Okay. What do you have to say about that one?
I just think it's like, I don't know, I just found it like interesting and like, I thought it was like very like important.
Mm. Okay, he liked that one too.
Isn't that like the verse that we read earlier about, where was that?
Oh, yeah. You're saying that the 10, the bloodthirsty hate the blameless.
Yeah.
But the upright seek his well-being.
And here it says the opposite. The unjust man... Before it was talking about the bloodthirsty man hates the blameless. Here it says that the unjust man is hated or is an abomination to the righteous.
Right.
And he whose way is straight, that's like the first one,
is an abomination
to the wicked.
Yeah.
So it's
a very interesting concept, actually, to think about that. I think, depending on which side you're on, I guess it's easy to see the other as the abomination, not realizing that you're probably an abomination to them as well.
Yeah, and ultimately God's the judge, not us. But I don't think that we shouldn't, that it's wrong to believe that you are following the right path, because unless you're deceiving yourself, I think you have a right to take that, you know. Do you get where I'm going with that?
Not really.
Well, okay. You need to have a proper understanding of your own position. Obviously, a person who is right in his way, or whose way is straight, had to take some effort to be that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had to do certain things and not do other things. So obviously he has some understanding of why he might think he is or is not acting in a right way. Now you're saying that, well, the guy who's doing evil probably thinks he's acting in the right way. Maybe, maybe not. He may think he's acting in the right way from a different sense, in a pragmatic sense. I'm doing what's good for me.
Well,
I'm looking out for number one, not I'm doing what's right in the eyes of God.
Well, right. Or I'm doing what's right in the eyes of the world.
Yeah.
You're doing what's right in this so-called concept of God that you have, whatever that is. And therefore, I could despise you because of that. Or you're an abomination. And I think that that's what's happening today with the far left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look at the right as an abomination.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You're not concerned about the environment?
Yeah.
And you're not concerned about this and that, and you're not taking all these things seriously. And why are you not taking them seriously? Because you have this, you're believing in this myth that you've created. You're an abomination.
Yeah.
Whereas we are doing what's right because we're mm-hmm. doing what's best for the world and for future generations. And so, yeah, I can see that they would be very
much offended
by
I can see
our
that.
Presence.
Mm-hmm.
Which is strange. Yet we look at them as being the abomination. So that's what I was saying before. It's strange to realize that both sides actually hold each other in disdain.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true.
It's like, how could they look at us as being an abomination? But they do, because it's
I can see how. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
actually, for what you're saying.
Yeah. You're just drifting through the world. You're part of the problem, definitely not providing any solutions.
I don't see it on the level of environmentalism. I think that's a false issue, because there's no excuse for a Christian to be taking an attitude that is against the environment.
No, of course not. I'm not talking
about
I
could see it
pouring motor oil into the lake.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I would never do that. But I, on the other hand, I don't buy the rhetoric. Like the Greta Thunbergs and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that means nothing.
I think it's fake and phony.
Right, and therefore, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If Greta Thunberg doesn't resonate with you, you're part of the problem.
Well. That's very interesting, because the resonance there is purely on the basis of rhetoric. There's no content to resonate with. You know what I mean? That was a totally emotional appeal.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Of course.
Now, on the other hand, where I can see there being a content-based point of division would be on the issue of, let's say, the sexual fluidity issue or gender fluidity. Because here they're saying you're holding to these strict definitions of what, you know, sexuality is, and that's, there's no basis for that. It's just because you believe in the Bible and
it's some archaic
God. Yeah. And it's unscientific. And so they feel more justified in criticizing you. And it's much more difficult to, if, in other words, you could actually have
I know what you're saying.
Conversation on that level. Unfortunately, the conversation is going to get down to whether or not you believe what in what the scriptures teach or not.
Right. And I think there's this, when you look at a Christian from that perspective, it's like, oh, you don't believe in science. It's easy to look at them as being kind of like some, you know, backwoods redneck white, which, you know, it's easy to dismiss those people.
And that is another false statement, though, that I want to respond to. Because I've been thinking about this.
You know what I mean? Like, even... it's hard to explain, not, but when you look at someone as being white trash...
The people who say... Like, wait a minute, though. But, John, the people who say you don't believe in science, it's not a fair accusation. I'm going to tell you why. What do you mean by science? Do you mean the scientific method where you're testing hypotheses and seeing if they're true or false and then making... Christians believe in that.
Of course.
But if you mean by science what the scientific community has come to a consensus as to what they're going to support or not support, why should I believe it? That's just their opinion. It's not based on the scientific method either. The scientific method may have been involved in some abstruse way, you know, for them to come to that conclusion, but it's certainly not uncontestable.
I get you. But yeah, I mean, I support everything you said. It was well said.
So anyway, we got another chapter, two chapters left, I think.
Oh, that's right. We've got 30.
We took our time on this one.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. We have two more chapters left.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
We
have two recordings now.
I'm going to do the recording, shut it off, if I can find my screen again.
We've got two now, though.